Betting Across America is live from the South Point Hotel and Casino here in Las Vegas. Happy Father's Day weekend to everyone across the country tuning in here on VSiN and VSiN.com. Hope you are enjoying a restful and relaxing weekend thus far. I'm Adam Candy here inside the sportsbook. James Salinas joins from Denver, Colorado, as we get you ready for a big day. It is moving day at the U.S. Open in just a few minutes. Our friend Matt Eumanns will join us, VSiN senior editor and golf better, who is actually taking in the golf live at Torrey Pines at the U.S. Open. Matt will join us, talk about where he sees the tournament standing right now. Of course, we have Game 7 in the NBA between the Milwaukee Bucks and the Brooklyn Nets. That line has just moved, and we will keep you updated on what's going on there. Also, Game 4 of the Stanley Cup semifinals between the Tampa Bay Lightning and the New York Islanders, as well as a full card in the Major League Baseball June slate. Let's start with what I'm sure people are still talking about this morning, James, because they certainly were talking about it last night on social media and elsewhere. The Utah Jazz with an epic collapse, if you want to look at it that way. Or if you want to look at it from the other side, you can say a stirring comeback by the Los Angeles Clippers. Terrence Mann goes the distance for Los Angeles as they come from behind from 25 down to defeat the Jazz 131-119. That game in Los Angeles, as they close the series out 4-2, sets up a Western Conference Finals. For the first time the Los Angeles Clippers make it there, they will head to Phoenix for a Sunday afternoon game against the Suns. That updates our NBA championship odds here, James. Suns become the favorite. Suns are plus 250, Nets plus 275, which of course is the longest price we've seen on the Nets in quite some time. Clippers plus 350, Bucks are 5-1, Sixers 8-1, Hawks 35-1. Let's stick with the team that we were just talking about here with the Los Angeles Clippers, because they've obviously latched on to some sort of magic here without Kawhi Leonard in the last two games. Is that a blip on the radar, or do you think that maybe Ty Lue and company have found something that can carry them through for a little while?
It's about matchups, and I think the matchup with the Clippers versus the Jazz, yeah, Kawhi Leonard, obviously the championship caliber player that he is and won multiple championships with different teams. Anytime he's out of the lineup, and we'll see what his status is, fear about an ACL injury, and if that's the case, he is obviously done for the series or done for the season and maybe miss all of next season too. But thinking about where the Clippers were matching up with the Jazz, injuries, yeah, with Kawhi Leonard out the last couple games, but also the Clippers have played without Kawhi Leonard during the season. So there was plenty of stretches where Kawhi Leonard did not see the floor. So being able to work through certain rotations in his absence, the Clippers have been there and done that throughout the season. Thinking about the Jazz, though, and the injuries that they had. Now, Mike Conley was on the floor for a few minutes yesterday, but that was the first time he had participated in this series, and clearly nowhere close to 100% playing on one leg with that hamstring injury that he had suffered. He had suffered that back in the regular season and pulled it again in that Memphis series. So I think here Clippers were able to take advantage of a few things. The injuries there with Conley as well as Donovan Mitchell, nowhere close to 100% with that nagging ankle injury. We saw that play out through the series, and he gutted it out and had some great performances, but not the Mitchell that we saw in the playoff bubble last year. But thinking about the Clippers here, taking advantage of those injuries, now you're going to go play a Phoenix Suns team that is much more athletic on the perimeter defensively than we saw with the Jazz, and I think that's the biggest mismatch here that was with the Jazz, is not an athletic team. Your backcourt's banged up. Clippers took full advantage of it. Different scenario rolling in against Phoenix in this next round in the Western Conference Finals, but big question. Question mark. What is Chris Paul's status? When is he going to see the court in that series?
Of course, it is the biggest question probably remaining overall in these playoffs. If you assume that Kawhi Leonard likely is done, and when we start talking about an ACL injury, have a hard time believing that Kawhi Leonard would come back from that, but we shall see. But yeah, because when you look at the fact that defensively, I think you can probably see a little better matchup for the Suns against the Clippers than for the Jazz with those injured perimeter players that the Jazz had. Suns are interesting for sure when we talk about this series. This is VSiN's Betting Across America. We are live from the South Point in Las Vegas. I'm Adam Candy. James Salinas is in Denver, Colorado, as we roll on through discussion of the NBA playoffs. Let's shift gears and talk about the Eastern Conference. We have a Game 7, the first of two Game 7s in the Eastern Conference between the Milwaukee Bucks and what's left of the Brooklyn Nets. No Kyrie Irving. I'll say about a leg and a half of James Harden out there on the floor for the Nets, and that's the line we mentioned that has moved. It has ticked up here at the South Point from 1.5 in favor of the Nets up to 2. Total still sitting at 216. That game is an 8:40 p.m. Eastern start here tonight, James. The Game 6 performance out of the Bucks certainly was what you would have hoped for a team on the ropes that has the health advantage. Now we head back to Brooklyn, and we remember that the last time we were there, Kevin Durant went full NBA Jam. He's on fire and destroyed the Milwaukee Bucks in the big comeback. What do you see between the Nets and the Bucks here in Game 7?
Durant's going to have a very similar performance here in Game 7 that he had in Game 5 for the Nets to be able to advance because of the injuries. Obviously, you mentioned it, Kyrie Irving not going to play tonight. And then Harden, you mentioned a leg and a half. I don't even know if I give him credit for that extra half. He's clearly hampered on one leg there. And we saw one. They had a steal. There was the opportunity for a fast break and a run out. He tried. He stopped. He pulled the ball back on their own side of the court and waited and said, we got to play half court because I cannot get up and down the floor at full speed. So, yeah, I think that's the shame. And so not only for the Nets, but so many teams right now dealing with injuries to key players, all-star players, superstar players. And it's definitely tagged the Brooklyn Nets in this spot. Now, they do have the comfort of playing at home, and you do have the best player on the floor here with Kevin Durant. And he's going to have to be that guy again to be able to carry past this Bucks team that I think the last few games, now the first two games in the series playing in Brooklyn, completely blitzed, in particular that second game where it was just a while. They were down 50 points, I think, at one point in Game 2. They've been able to right themselves from their mindset to get some confidence back because they could have easily been shook in that first two games beating Hammer the way that they did. So some good competitive pride that showed out for the Bucks, and in particular Chris Middleton, who the last four games has been right there with Giannis, the 1-2 punch that the Bucks counted on all season long. He has stepped up immensely in these last four games, been able to pour in, he poured, 38 points the other night, shooting the ball with a lot of confidence. And I think that's what we look at. Is he hesitant when he catches the ball? It's catch and shoot, because the defense for the Nets has to be conscious of Giannis getting to the rim, continuing to drive to the basket, and that's what he did in the last game in Game 6. Did not settle for longer for perimeter shots. No three-point attempts for Giannis in that Game 6. Everything was to the paint. And so both of those players, as the game progressed, we saw that their confidence continued to build. And I think we saw on the other side for the Nets, clearly they know that they gave it a tough effort. But as they started to fade down that end of the third, into the fourth quarter in Game 6, clearly they know that in the back of their minds, they know that they're not full strength. And that's going to hamper them going into this Game 7. Now this number has still continued to move. It basically opened roughly at about a pick. And now I see a number of places out here in Colorado anyway, Adam, that it's moved up to 2 in favor of the Brooklyn Nets.
James, remember the beginning of this series when we were looking at totals in the 239, 240 range back when everybody was healthy, Kyrie and James Harden were both at full strength. Now, the unders are now 5-0 and one push now that we have a much different looking series. Total sitting here at 216, I don't have a play on this, but would you have a lean either way on the total?
Got to go under. For me, it would be the under. Looking at, yeah, and it's way up. Talk about the adjustment you made from 238, 239 from Game 1 to where we sit now. Roughly, let's just call it 216. I see a number of 216s out here where the total sits between the Nets and the Bucks for this Game 7. Now, we know Game 7s, everything the season, win or go home, and the party's over here for one of these teams tonight, and they're going to value the basketball, but we're not going to see the same pace of play. Bucks want to get out and have, they play with a lot of They play with a lot of pace, but and so do the Nets, but the Nets don't have the firepower to do that. No Kyrie on the floor tonight. Obviously, we know that he's out. But then James Harden can't get up and down the floor. He cannot run. He is strictly going to be a half-court player tonight. And for the most part, he is going to be that facilitator that he was for the most of the season. But he's not able to really get to the rim. These last two games that he's come back, he's taken 19 shots. Of those 19 shots, 14 have been from beyond the arc. He just doesn't have that other leg to be able to push and drive and beat players off the dribble. So I think the pace is going to continue to be slow. I typically like to bet on unders in game sevens as it is. So yeah, the adjusted price now for this total has moved significantly from game one to game seven, but still sitting where it's at with all the firepower and the injuries that have been suffered by the Nets. I think the pace is going to slow. So there'd be only one play for me, and we'd be playing the under again.
These two teams in the playoffs, James, are fifth and seventh in pace, and that is a marked difference from what we saw in the regular season. I'm going to talk about this a little bit more when we get to props later in the show, but 9 combined possessions less for these two teams in the playoffs than what they got per 48 minutes during the regular season. That's minus 2. 216 is the total on that game as of the moment. On the other side, we have a game 7 coming up between the Hawks and the 76ers. These Atlanta Hawks had a chance to close it out at home. Couldn't get the job done. Philadelphia 104, Atlanta 99. The game sets up game 7 in Philly. We are now looking at the Sixers. Bet up from 6.5 to 7. Total of 216.5. James, you could tell me just about anything between the Sixers and the Hawks, and I would probably believe it given the way this series has gone.
Who knows which way? Yeah, it's such a back and forth. Now, winning, they're better off. I think right now you're better off being the road team than you are the home team with as many road wins that have been solidified in this series. But yeah, usually you want to have, that's why you lift all them weights. That's why you do all those things, Adam. So you get that game 7 at home if necessary. And with Philly being the number one seed, here they are as the home favorite and a pretty significant home favorite. You mentioned, I see a lot of sevens out here too in Colorado in favor of the Sixers in this decisive game in the Eastern Conference. And I think from the Atlanta Hawks side, what a coming out party all series long, not only this series, but the Knicks series as well for Trae Young and the confidence that young fella plays with and the I still think there's so much more to his game that there's still a high ceiling on that young fella. Being able to shoot with range and confidence that he does, as well as getting around the corner, the handles that he has, the teardrops and the floaters that he likes to put up there in the middle of the court when he gets inside the paint, sharing with his teammates as well, getting everybody involved. Spectacular player and a great series and a great playoff for Trae Young, but who's going to step up and be there with him? He can't do it all by himself, especially on the road in game 7. Going to need some help from his teammates, and that's what he did not get last night. John Collins, no factor scoring the basketball last night, just 7 points for Collins. I didn't see anything out of Bogdanovich. His knee, he went out in that fourth quarter with his knee injury, so not sure of his status for game 7, but it clearly affected him yesterday in that game, not able to shoot well, just 3 of 11 from the floor, and really their best 3-point shooting threat, 1 of 6 yesterday. And then nothing from Lou Williams. We did see Gallo play pretty well and got extended minutes because of the injury to Bogdanovich. That's probably maybe the X factor here for the Hawks on the road, is they're going to need a big game out of Gallinari, as well as Lou Williams is going to have to contribute. They both had big games in game 5. No show for Lou Williams last night. Going to need big games out of both those guys tomorrow for game 7, especially if Bogdanovich is not going to be at full strength, but I don't suspect he will be.
That 216.5 is the number that interests me. It's already been bet down a little bit. I might grab it before it gets any farther down here. You look at the way this series has progressed, James. There were some high-scoring games early on, but it's been pretty much what you expect out of a playoff series as the teams get to know each other a little bit, as the possessions become more and more valuable. You tend to see those numbers come down. And if you look at the last 3 games, you're looking at totals combined 203, 215, and yesterday of 203. And then you factor in, as you just said, the Bogdanovich absence potentially for game 7 as well. You can see why the number has moved the direction it has. It's probably the direction that I'd be thinking about as well here in this game in game 7. Of course, the other one we mentioned a little bit off the top, the Clippers and the Jazz, just hard to fathom exactly what happened in that game for the Utah Jazz. But we move on from it, and we go to the Los Angeles Clippers tomorrow, a 3:30 p.m. Eastern start. It is game one of the Western Conference Finals for the first time ever for the Los Angeles Clippers. We do not know if Chris Paul will play for the Suns. We do not know for sure if Kawhi Leonard will play for the Clippers. Obviously, much less optimism for Kawhi than for CP3. The Suns are 5-point favorites. The total is 221.5. How do the Suns and the Clippers match up?
Thinking about the Suns, well, that game one opened at 4 and has been bet up to 5. What's going on with Chris Paul? Obviously, that's the biggest question mark going into this series. I don't think Kawhi Leonard for the Clippers is going to play. If it's an ACL injury, we know he's finished for the series and for the season. But with the Suns, we don't know the status of Chris Paul. So I'm not going to get involved right now until I know what the status is of him for game one as well as for this series. When does he get back out of COVID protocol? And how was he actually sick? Did it impact him? How is his health? And does it impact him when he's out on the court? We've seen certain players. Think about Jason Tatum earlier in the year. He contracted COVID, and he said it for most of the second half of the season. He said it really limited him. He had great games, but it really impacted his stamina. So something to we have to factor as the series progresses whenever Chris Paul does get back out on the court. But I think here the matchup, it's a different matchup, and I think the Clippers were able to take advantage not only of the injuries to the backcourt with Mike Conley basically not playing in that series and then Donovan Mitchell playing very hampered with that ankle injury, but then the lack of athleticism on the perimeter for Utah defensively, getting out to shooters, being able to stay in front of the basketball. They were constantly scrambling in a help position and late to shooters because they're just not very athletic to stay in front of the ball. Well, now with the Suns, if Chris Paul comes back, we know on the ball defender, very good on the ball defender. Now, not as good as he was earlier in his career, but you got Booker, very good athlete out there on the perimeter, as well as Bridges, another really good athlete on the perimeter defensively. So I think that's going to be the matchup for me that I want to watch as this series progresses. So I'm not going to get involved with this game one or this series until I know the status of Chris Paul. But as far as the matchup goes for the Suns, if Chris Paul comes back and he is healthy, this is the healthiest team right now left in the playoffs is the Phoenix Suns, especially with the Clippers having Kawhi Leonard being a big question mark and most likely not going to play.
James, this is another game where the total is what jumps out to me. 221.5 feels quite high for a couple of reasons. One, we don't know the status of Chris Paul, as you just mentioned. Two, the Clippers are coming off not only a 7-game series against the Dallas Mavericks, but they are coming off what is a huge expending of energy against this Utah Jazz team. They went out there and had to not only put on that performance up at altitude in Utah in game 5 to win that game, but then they have to expend the energy to come back from down 25. They have to turn around less than 24 hours and come play this Suns team in Phoenix. And these two teams play slow. And it's not just the playoffs. If you're looking at the matchups and saying, well, these teams haven't scored a lot in the playoffs because Dallas played slow against the Clippers, because, well, oh, the Lakers play slow. That's what the Suns had. No, I mean, if you look at these two teams during the regular season, they are 24th in the Suns and 28th in the Clippers in pace. And so they do not get a lot of possessions in the first place. I'll go ahead and lean toward the under here fairly strongly in game one, especially with the Clippers trying to get their legs back under them. And we're not sure exactly what Chris Paul will look like. You just talked about what it's like for players coming back from COVID and whether or not they have their lungs, whether or not they have their legs. Likely to be a feeling out process between these two teams a little bit at the beginning, even though we did talk about the fact that during a series, the scores tend to go down as the series goes on. I struggle to see where we're going to get to 221.5 in this game. Of course, we still have a little more than 24 hours before this one goes off. That total has been pretty steady thus far. And when we talked to Chris Andrews from the South Point earlier on, he said that the movement of the number and that 5 sitting there on the Suns suggests to him that Chris Paul likely will play. James, on the Clippers, we look at the absence of Kawhi Leonard and them going to that small ball lineup against the Utah Jazz. Can Reggie Jackson or Terrence Mann or guys like that keep up these kind of performances?
I'm not sure if they can go as small like they did against the Jazz, because Gobert is not an offensive threat whatsoever. Now, DeAndre Ayton, another big fella, going to struggle to go out there if they do go small, to pull him away from the basket, to close out to shooters, and not going to be a perimeter defender. But in this case, do they take advantage, and they should take advantage of DeAndre Ayton's ability to post and to score and finish as play through the post and go inside out offensively to take advantage of that small ball lineup, if in fact that's what the Clippers run out there. So a lot of adjustments to be made. You also talked about the Clippers and how much energy was expended in that game seven or that game six, but also all the games within that series. Keep in mind, too, they played an exhausting series against the Mavericks, seven games that went. So 13 high-intensity games so far for the Clippers versus a Suns team right now. Yeah, Chris Paul questionable, not sure what his status is, but a Suns team that's been kicking it out there in the desert for a week, healthy, rested, ready to get after it. This is going to be a tough spot for the Clippers to short turnaround, like you said, to now roll into Phoenix with a team that is much more athletic than what the Jazz are, much more health, much healthier, and rested and ready to go.
When we return here on VSiN's Betting Across America, yes, I understand it's Saturday and Wall Street is closed, but we do have a stock report to get to. Very, very important information on the other side of this break. You are tuned in to VSiN here from the South Point in Las Vegas, as well as Denver, Colorado, on the Sports Betting Network. With basketball, hockey, and baseball games every week, it's time to get into BetMGM Sports Nevada, premier sports betting app. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today. Stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. VSiN's Betting Across America continues from the South Point in Las Vegas. I'm Adam Candy. James Salinas is in Denver, Colorado. The Mets are no longer scoreless over the course of 21 innings. Francisco Lindor with a two-run home run off Joe Ross, and they have a 2-0 lead in the first inning of the first game of their doubleheader from Citi Field. New York, of course, the home of the New York Stock Exchange, and we have a stock report for you here on your Saturday morning. This one comes from the National Football League. Minicamp wrapping up for National Football League teams, and I'm curious, James, we have some teams with some new quarterbacks here, and what did you see from them at minicamp? I'm going to list you off some win totals here on the Broncos, the Bears, and the Rams. Broncos, 8.5 wins. Bears, 7.5 wins. Rams, 10.5 wins. Any strong leans on overs or unders based on the information that we got out of minicamp here over the last week?
I'll avoid the mini camp piece because I'm not sure what you can really take from that when we know these are walkthrough practices in a sense that, yeah, maybe some 7-on-7 drills, but no contact and no clever schemes on the defensive side to try to confuse these quarterback changes that are going with their new teammates and getting acclimated to the whole new playbook. So looking at the Broncos, I think of these three that we're looking at with the Broncos, Bears, and Rams, I think the Rams sitting at toughest division in my mind in football in the NFC West. That's just going to be a battle and a slugfest, and the Rams really have a second half of this. Their second half of the schedule is very difficult, I think, to get past and get 11 wins. Now, I know there's 17 games, so it's in a sense 11-6. I'm not sure if the Rams get there just because of the strength of schedule, I think, is very difficult, and their division is very difficult. Thinking about the Bears at 7.5 wins, who's going to play quarterback? I think that's what I need to know. And when are they going to put in Justin Fields? Are you going to start week one, or are we going to go with the red rider there. And I think with whichever way they go with the quarterback position there in Chicago come week one, this is not the same defense that we've seen. I know you still think of the Bears and the Monsters of the Midway and Vic Fangio and everything that he did there with that defense for the time that he was there with Chicago. It's not the same. A number of those players, especially in the secondary, are now in Denver. So that's where I'm looking at. Probably the Bears under the win total because I think they have, if not the toughest schedule, one of the toughest strengths of schedule in the NFL for 2021. I'd be looking at the Broncos, 8.5 wins. I love what they've done on the defensive side, especially in that secondary. And now Fangio is going to have one of the best secondaries in the league. Home field advantage here in Mile High, and it will be full capacity with the last place schedule here for the Broncos. I like the Broncos of all these three teams to go over their win total at 8.5.
Yeah, I've been pretty clear along with you, James, that I'm bullish on the Broncos' chances. If you get even average quarterback play out of Teddy Bridgewater, I think you're looking at a team that has the pieces around him on the offensive side and as well as that defense to be competitive week in and week out. Really, they were for the most part last year too, when they were not starting Kendall Hinton at quarterback. So the Bears situation, I think that's the one where we get a little bit of information out of this minicamp. It might not have been anything we saw on the field, but Matt Nagy coming out and saying Matt Nagy things in which he's saying, well, there's no way that Justin Fields starts week one. It's absolutely Andy Dalton week one. We'll see. But if you look at that schedule for the Chicago Bears and you see Rams, Bengals, Browns in the first 3 weeks, and then you see, man, is that a Charmin soft landing to go Lions, Raiders, week four, week five. If you want to ease Justin Fields in, it feels like week four would be a pretty nice little target there for a Bears team that probably isn't going anywhere with where that schedule is. Odds to be the starting quarterback in week one from BetMGM, Andy Dalton minus 225, Justin Fields plus 170, Nick Foles at 20-1. I mean, look, unless Andy Dalton gets hurt, then it seems like Matt Nagy did not have to come out and be nearly as definite as he was here in June about who the starting quarterback is going to be. Is he potentially trying to take some pressure off Justin Fields? Sure. But at the same time, he could have just said, yeah, you know, Andy Dalton is a guy that we trust and we'll see how Justin comes along. No, he said there's no way that Justin Fields is starting week one for this team. But if you look a few weeks ahead, you can see where there could be a pretty good spot for a guy they traded up pretty high to get and come in and be the starting quarterback for the Chicago Bears instead of the stopgap Andy Dalton. On the other side of the break, we finally have some series prices in on the Clippers and the Suns. We'll get to those shortly here on Betting Across America from VSiN. We have a new feature on VSiN.com. Every day we're posting the latest betting splits on every game in the major sports with current odds and what percentage of bets and money are being placed on each game. Check this info daily to find out which games are seeing most tickets written and if that matches the money coming in on those games. It'll help you find a betting edge, and of course we have all the odds, data, and analysis for every game as well. Start your next sports bet at VSiN.com. Stay tuned here on Betting Across America. In about 10 minutes, Matt Youmans will join us live from San Diego to talk about the 2021 U.S. Open and a wide open leaderboard heading into Saturday's third round. Right now, stick with us here in Las Vegas and Colorado. Adam Candy and James Salinas talking through the Western Conference Finals. And we have some new information from our friends at BetMGM here, James. The series prices have been posted for the first ever trip for the Los Angeles Clippers to the conference finals. Phoenix is the favorite, as expected. Minus 225 on the Phoenix Suns. Clippers come back at plus 185. I'm going to read off the exact game scores here with their prices and see what you think of these. Suns to sweep at 8-1. Suns at 4-1 and at 4-3 are both plus 350 to win in six games. They are 4-1. A Clippers sweep is 28-1. Clippers in 5, 12-1. Then Clippers in 6, plus 550. Clippers in 7, plus 650. Your initial read on that minus 225 on the Suns and plus 185 on the Clippers, do you feel like that is weighted where it should be on these two teams?
It's weighted, I guess, if that's the fact that Chris Paul is going to play and is going to play the duration of this series and is going to play healthy. I mean, he is he's the leader of that team. He facilitates everything, and what a galvanizing force he has been to come over to the Suns this past year and take on that leadership role. And questions were going to be, well, how is he going to coexist in the backcourt with Devin Booker? And Monty Williams has done it just fine. And I think I really like Monty Williams as a coach with the Suns. That kind of really set the culture of that team last year, and we saw how they performed at the latter part of the season into the bubble, of how they were trying to get into that bubble and how well they competed down the stretch last year, and really guys knowing their roles and how they fit into this the identity of this Suns team. So, yeah, I mean, you're thinking about here, because if this suspected Kawhi Leonard does have a knee injury beyond this series where he's not going to be able to play, hopefully it's not that ACL, but if he's not able to play, I mean, I get it. I think the Suns, not only where they're sitting now, Chris Paul, if he comes back and he's healthy, but the fact that this is a team that hasn't had to exert a lot of effort and energy. They were able to go through and roll right through a beat-up Nuggets team, but now they're rested, they're ready, they're much more athletic than what we saw out of the Jazz, and as far as aside from Chris Paul and his COVID status, much healthier than the Jazz team that the Clippers had to face in the last round.
So, James, I want to talk to you about the longer potential series here, if you like the Clippers, and where the price is on the series, plus 185. I have a hard time seeing where the Clippers are winning this in less than six games, with or without Chris Paul, based on the depth of that Phoenix Suns roster. But let's just talk through the math involved in this here. You're obviously at plus 185 having to pay a small price to include the sweep and the five games, plus 550 on them winning in six, plus 650 on the Clippers winning in seven. Would you be more inclined to take one of those longer series prices on the Clippers if that's the direction that you believe this series would go?
Only if Chris Paul is going to be impacted with the COVID protocol and is not able, maybe he doesn't play the first game or the first two games there, and then how does that impact that young Suns team? Because outside of Jay Crowder, it is a very young team, minus Chris Paul out there on the floor. So such an integral part of what the Suns do on both ends of the floor. But I think as far as the Clippers are concerned, my biggest concern now, not only with Kawhi Leonard and his status, but also, how much have they, we were talking earlier in the show about that game six against the Jazz and the high level of play and the energy expended, not only in game six of having to come back from that big deficit of 25 points in that second half, but also each and every one of those games was high level competitive basketball, as well as the seven games prior to that against the Mavericks. When is this team going to finally hit the wall when it comes to just the energy standpoint? There's going to be a point where, yeah, those legs are going to start to tire, because it's a quick turnaround. They needed a game on Sunday for the networks, and you got it now from a quick turnaround, less than 48 hours from that grueling game on game six late Friday night to now spinning out, flying out to Phoenix to have to go play a well-rested Suns team. They're not doing the Clippers any favors here by trying to stretch out any kind of extended rest. I think that's my biggest concern. The nature of the 13 games that they played so far in the playoffs is going to catch up with them, especially if Kawhi Leonard is not out there. I still favor the Suns in this series. I think Chris Paul hopefully will be back, and when he gets back out there, will be healthy to play and perform the way that he needs to be the leader of this Suns team. If anything, I'd probably be looking more so at the Suns in and or six games plus 400, or the Suns in seven games plus 350. This is not going to be a short series for the Suns the way that we saw it against the Nuggets.
Well, if you take the sweep out of the equation, you're looking at the Suns at minus 225 for the series, because I would have a difficult time seeing either team sweeping the series. But you combine those prices on Suns in five, Suns in six, Suns in seven, you essentially work it to even money if you're spreading your bet out on those three potential results and getting something that's quite better than the minus 225 on the Phoenix Suns. And that is the way I think this series is ultimately going to go in favor of Phoenix if Kawhi Leonard is not able to go, if Chris Paul is able to play, even even if he misses tomorrow and ends up back for game two. But again, the information we have on Chris Paul, and you have to understand what the situation is here as well. Chris Paul ends up in the COVID protocol. And if you understand what's going on there, you understand that Chris Paul, according to all the reports that we've seen, is vaccinated against COVID-19. And so if he is able to test twice in a 24-hour period negative, he can come back. It's not a matter of the symptoms anymore. It's not like what we dealt with COVID testing over the last year, year and a half, where you had to wait till the symptoms went away, you're out for 10 days. In the NBA's COVID protocol, as of now, that only applies to unvaccinated players. And so judging by what we've heard around Chris Paul, it is certainly well within the realm of possibility that Chris Paul could be back pretty well at a moment's notice here for the Phoenix Suns, and he was playing quite well for them throughout that series. Obviously, it was a pretty shorthanded Denver Nuggets team, but Chris Paul, I would say, much more likely to see him in this series than it is for us to potentially see Kawhi Leonard coming back. On the other side, our man Matt Eumanns is in San Diego. He's living the dream that we all would like to live, taking in the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines on this weekend. And Matt will update us on what he has going in the tournament, as well as if he sees any value in some of these less known names that are at the top of the leaderboard. It is VSiN's Betting Across America. You are live with us on the Sports Betting Network. Discover BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. Sign up today and win $100 if you place a $1 wager on any NBA playoff game. Neither team hits a three-pointer, regardless of your bet's outcome. Simply use bonus code VSiN100 when you place your first bet. Enjoy the playoffs more than ever with BetMGM. New customer offer paid in free bets. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Colorado, Indiana, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, Washington, D.C., or West Virginia only. Excludes Michigan dissociated persons. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, Nevada, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. And 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. In Tennessee, call or text the red line 800-889-9789. In Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. This promotional offer is not available in Nevada. You are tuned in to VSiN's Betting Across America here on VSiN and VSiN.com from the South Point in Las Vegas. I'm Adam Candy, joined by James Salinas in Denver, Colorado, and we're going to throw it out to the phone lines to the man that I hear they're calling the King of San Diego after a couple of days down at the U.S. Open in Torrey Pines. VSiN senior editor, host of My Guys in the Desert, Matt Eumanns is live on the line with us. Set the scene for us there, sir. How are things down in San Diego this weekend?
Adam, the weather is typical San Diego in the morning. It's overcast. You got the marine layer. It's a little cold out, but that's going to change. I think this afternoon it's going to be sunny and warm. So it's a typical San Diego day. The scene I can set for you right now is I'm pulling into the parking lot outside the golf course. Is that exciting or what? That's what I'm doing right now.
Wow, right this moment. I don't know what direction you're coming from, but you might have just been along the cliffs of Del Mar. Like, it could be really beautiful. You might be underselling this a little bit for everybody, but we'll just roll with it. It's a parking lot. U.S. Open leaderboard as we take a look here. Henley and Bland open the day as the co-leaders at 5-under. Matthew Wolff, Louis Oosthuizen sitting there at 4, and pre-tournament favorite Rahm at 3-under. Matt, with what you've seen out of the first couple days of this tournament, how close do you think someone has to be to the lead right now to have a reasonable chance of making a run here on Saturday?
Well, Well, the players at the top of the weaker at the leaderboard, I think, are rather weak in terms of being threats to win a major. This is not the the top five you would expect on a U.S. Open leaderboard, that's for sure. So I really thought going into today, anybody within about eight strokes has a shot, Adam. I really think that's the case because I believe it's more wide open than public perception with Lind. Because a lot of times, you know, you get overreactions to what happens in the first round, maybe even the second round. In reality, we're like halfway through an NBA game. We've seen teams wipe out 25-point deficits in the second half of NBA games like it's nothing recently, right? Last week, we saw Garrett Higo come from six shots down on Sunday to win a golf tournament. So I do think there's an opportunity for somebody to come from way back in the pack and win this thing. And I'm not going to say Jordan Spieth is that guy, but that's an example. Right now, Spieth is 3-under on the course this morning. He was 4-over going into today, so now he's 1-over. He's only 6 strokes off the lead. There is an opportunity for guys like that to make a big move today and tomorrow, because I really don't see any of those names at the top of the leaderboard who are going to run away with this thing. Right? Nobody's going to run away and hide. So if somebody gets hot here, and especially today, on moving day, that you got a chance even on the adjusted odds board, I think, to still hit a player. It's pretty good odds out there. And you know, I noticed Brooks Koepka around 16-1 at one spot last night. Koepka's 5 strokes back with 2 days to go, and that's still a pretty good bet because I hated the way Koepka played yesterday. He walked off the fourth green with a birdie, and he was a 4-under, and he was terrible after that. I would think he bounces back and plays much better today. But, yeah, there's going to be some guys down this board who are going to have a chance to win this thing. I think you're going to make a big move up today.
Matt, you mentioned the weather, and it's overcast, as it usually is in the mornings out there at Torrey Pines. But as the day progresses, the sun comes out. What does that look like? Because it looks like it's going to be another dry day, similar to yesterday out there, and through the weekend here. For someone who's looking to get involved in in-game or in-play action through this tournament, as the day progresses and you see a different – do you see something different out there on the course as far as the play is concerned because of the weather or the sun or the dry conditions that happen, and what that might that look like and how that influences your handicap going into not only today but maybe into tomorrow?
Yeah, I think the scoring conditions, James, have been a little bit easier maybe in the morning. In the afternoon when the course dries out, it's been a little bit tougher, but still I don't think this course is playing as tough as maybe we thought it was going to going into the tournament. You heard about the rough and how treacherous that was going to be for the players. I don't think the rough is as bad necessarily as maybe it was painted. The picture was painted before the tournament. I think there was a little bit of an exaggeration. I don't think the greens have been that difficult. It is a long course. And it's a challenging course. And that's why after 2 days, the leader's 5-under. But hey, I heard people, a lot of sharp guys before the tournament saying that the winner of this tournament was going to be around even par, maybe 2-under. I always thought the winner was going to be 5-under or better, and I think the course is playing a little bit easier than some of the experts even thought. Now, as far as today, I'm not really sure yet how I would handicap the end game today. Just kind of like to walk the course and watch it unfold. But as far as the tee times, basically all the guys who are in contention tee off at 11 o'clock or later today. So I'm not really sure if anybody has an edge going into it as far as the weather. Like you said, the weather's going to be sunny. It's going to be a lot better here in the afternoon. But Jordan Spieth's out there right now, and he's playing quite well under the current conditions. So, it's really hard for me to say that any player is going to have an advantage today in terms of scoring because of the weather conditions.
The full Jordan Spieth experience, of course, coming in for overshooting 3-under, and you never know what's coming next. Matt, I'm looking at the putting stats right now for the U.S. Open and seeing, I mean, it bears out pretty well with most of the guys in contention being among the putting leaders, and you mentioned the potential change in course conditions later. What have you seen in terms of the greens over the last couple of days? Because we know that they do tend to bake out a little bit as the day goes on, and under U.S. Open conditions, that can be quite a challenge. Do you think there's going to be much of a split for the earlier tee times versus the later ones?
I really don't. And like I said, most of the guys who are in contention all tee off basically right now or later today. So I was trying to find a player. I thought maybe a player or two I thought might have an edge with the tee times today, but it's not really the case. And, you know, in San Diego, Adam and James, it's not like the weather is going to make a dramatic change anyway. It's not like the British Open where it's going to get windy and rainy and you're going to have weather conditions that really impact the scoring big time in the afternoon. I think it's just going to be subtle, small type of differences in the weather. I just tell you the truth. I'm just hoping Xander Schauffele starts playing a lot better today. I've got tickets on Koepka, Schauffele, Daniel Berger, and Joaquin Niemann. And I thought Niemann was the guy the last couple days on the course who didn't have it much luck at all. I thought he played a lot better than his score. And Daniel Berger's been real quiet the first couple rounds. Nothing sensational, but he's lingering in the hunt there. But Xander Schauffele was the guy who really annoyed me yesterday. And I walked off the course and actually went home after I watched Schauffele miss a birdie putt from about 3 feet for the second time. I was so annoyed. I'd had enough, and I just left the course and took off after that. But Schauffele could easily be tied for the lead in this tournament right now. He is just he's underachieved. If you look at all the ball striking stats, I think Schauffele has probably played as well or better than anyone the first couple of days. His short game, a couple poor chips, a couple of poor putts have cost him, I think, about four strokes. So, and Brooks Koepka yesterday, after, like I said, he got the four under, all of a sudden he couldn't put the ball in the fairway. And we haven't seen that problem with Koepka too often, but this course gets so dried out, I mean, you get so much roll. I actually think Koepka could probably use a three-wood off the tee instead of a driver and still be fine. He'll get plenty of distance off the three-wood. We'll see if he changes his approach to the game a little bit today. But if you're looking for a player, I think, to make a move, I'm gonna say that Koepka is gonna be, you know, double-digit odds. That's gotta be an elite player you have to take a look at right now.
Yeah, I mean, Brooks in a major is always worth a look. And as you mentioned, 16, pretty long number. Schauffele, as you referenced, 1.67 putts per green, 43rd overall in the tournament. So you can see exactly what's holding him back here. Matt Eumanns, VSiN senior editor, host of My Guys in the Desert. Nice enough to give us some time when he is out in beautiful San Diego. Sir, we appreciate it and enjoy the rest of the weekend.
Hey, you bet. Thanks, guys.
Well, James, you heard what Matt had to say about the weather out there. Certainly sounds like it's not going to have a major effect on what's going on, even when it heats up. And I think that's something to understand about Southern California this time of year. I remember the very first time I was out there in Los Angeles visiting a friend of mine who lived there. And, you know, it's the middle of June and sitting on the coast and I can't find the sun. And it's not the smog. It's something that they like to call the June gloom. If you're listening to us in California right now, you're probably saying, yeah, Adam, I know all about the June gloom, but it was a new thing to me, and it certainly hung over the coast, and we saw that if you're watching on TV, especially through the, I'd say, late morning to early afternoon with this tournament here at Torrey Pines. It is a real thing in San Diego. Matt Newman says, take a look at Brooks Koepka at 16-1. He is currently five shots off the lead before the round. When we come back, we'll take a closer look at the props for the Bucks and the Nets in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference semifinals here on VSiN's Betting Across America.